This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on a Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Walk through the main door of Special Gallery 1 in the Islamic Arts Museum, and you'll be greeted by a full-sized tent, 19th century ceremonial Egyptian tent that could easily accommodate a dinner party of a dozen or more as they mingle and chat over the music provided by a small chamber orchestra sharing the space inside. This is no Boy Scout tent of jungle green tarpaulin, but one that is a work of art, embroidered applique. Dr. Sam Belker, lecturer in art history and visual culture, Charles Sturt University, is the guest curator of this exhibition on Kemia and the Tent Makers of Cairo. Tents are old. They go back to the pharaohs. Why has tent making become something specific now to the Cairo tent makers?
That's because the tent makers of Cairo are like no other group of artists. What they are making are being made in the way their grandfathers and their great-grandfathers made the artwork, but they're making them for us today. The tent makers of Cairo no longer make tents. They make artworks, textile artworks, for the homes of people from around the world, from America, Australia, Malaysia. What they are creating are a new frontier of quilting, a new chapter in Islamic art. What they are creating are things that has never been seen in Malaysia until this exhibition at the Islamic Art Museum.
You use the expression quilt making. What does this quilting look like?
Quilt making brings to mind images of grandmothers who are sewing with frames and various pieces of colourful fabrics, making gifts for their grandchildren. Yet what we are seeing here are artworks and architecture, palaces in colourful fabrics, literally up to two stories tall in some cases. The relationship between Kayamiya, the art of the Egyptian tent makers, and quilting is the technique is basically the same. Every stitch one at a time through three layers of fabric. Now, this means that quilters recognize the work that has gone into the art of the tent makers. These were the first people to realize how important this art form was from Egypt and how it should be seen around the world. When their artwork was seen by curators of exhibitions and scholarly collectors of Islamic art, they were thinking, this doesn't fit. These are not precious objects that are kept only for museums. They're things from the streets. They're things from celebrations. They're the backdrop at a wedding. But the quilters realized that this artwork was special and had to be preserved as a living heritage.
At what juncture did this making of tents went from something utilitarian to so much focus was put into the artwork that it became something quite separate?
This is a great question, and it was a real mystery to work out how do we see these contemporary Kayamiya when we know their past was pavilions made for royalty. The answer are tourists. During the First and Second World Wars, visitors from around the world, soldiers, nurses from all sides, were stationed in Egypt, and in Cairo in particular. They wanted small, foldable souvenirs that were inexpensive and could be brought home, and the tent makers realized here is a new market. So rather than making enormous pavilions that a team of workers would spend 6 months sewing together, one individual could make one piece per day, a small piece, depicting a pharaoh or a scarab, something Egyptian. And they would sell it cheaply to a tourist. But they began to compete on these. Rather than making large pieces with loose stitches to make a huge area quickly, they made fine work for interior display, to work with a Western or international aesthetic. So what they created there were the first Kayamiya artworks, not architecture. And these touristic pieces, aspects of their design moved into the contemporary Kayamiya, making them smaller, making them brighter, making them finer. And this is how we see the transition from architecture to artwork through the influence of the souvenir.
I would imagine that in the early days of people using tents as dwelling places, as shelters, they might be decorated, but I would not assume that they would spend so much time decorating it this way. So who were the very first people who said there is a specific market for this, so that suddenly, even before the touristic period, that this slowly caught the eyes of people, that they would say, I want for a particular occasion this kind of tent?
I think if we go back into the history of the decorated tent in the Islamic world, we see a very interesting progression, because the oldest records we have of the decorated tents come from the ancient Egyptians, where they used leather appliqué in a form we call the baldachin, which is a carried canopy. And these were placed over the boats that carried the corpse of the deceased down the Nile to be buried. Thousands of years later, we start hearing stories of decorated tents in the travelers' accounts of Arabic from the Fatimid period 1,000 years ago and the Timurid period. And we then start seeing pieces of appliqué found in the graveyards of the Mamluk period. So these small fragments...
When was the Mamluk period?
500 years ago. So we are looking at images that go from being a legend to being a picture in a book to being a fragment of the real appliqué. And then by the time of the Qajaris and the Ottomans, which is about 200 years ago, we see complete tents. And most of these complete tents, the Ottoman tents before the Egyptian tent makers, most of these are now preserved as war trophies after the siege of Vienna in 1683. At this siege, the city of Vienna was surrounded by thousands of colorful, brilliantly decorated tents. They used decorated tents in military context because it showed the army they were facing that this was just the tip of a powerful economic force that could spend money on luxuries in a military capacity. These tents were then taken as trophies after the siege of Vienna failed for the Ottomans and distributed across Europe. So they are found in museums around Europe today. But the museums have not been collecting the Egyptian tents that were made just for the Egyptian local audiences. So the exhibition that we have here today in Malaysia is very special for showcasing this lost heritage.
So even in antiquity, there was a separation between the tents that you would just use if you were a nomadic group of people and the decorated tents.
Yes, very much so. There's a scholar, Peter Alfred Andrews, who has specialized in this history, and I recommend his very large books if you're interested in this. But the difference between the functional tent is a place for the human body's shelter. Khayamiya tents are for the human aesthetic expression of celebration, not shelter. The shelter they provide is acoustic. You can play music in these spaces and it does not reverberate the same way. You can hear conversation clearly. But the shelter they also provide really is to distinguish the ordinary from the extraordinary. They are a liminal space, an area where someone will demarcate an important event and they will first signal this event by raising the tent, which automatically invites your neighbors in for the wedding, the birthday, the funeral, the graduation, the political rally, whatever it is. And this tent is an invitation then to begin an important event.
So these tents were built or created specifically for the elite. It's not for the common man in the street.
That's right. The elite would own the tent. Many mosques, in fact, would own a tent, which they would bring out during Ramadan for the Eid feasts and things like this. They also use them for the Mawlid festivals across rural Egypt. But individuals increasingly rarely owned the tents. The tents became a thing for the common man after the invention of imitation khayamiya, which is a whole other story within the history of this art form and the reason why it is endangered today.
Take us to the Cairo street where the tent makers live. What does that look like and how do they live?
The street of the tent makers in Cairo is the beating heart of the Khayamiya. As you walk through the enormous twin minarets of Bab Zawela, the ancient southern gate of the old city of Cairo, you walk past horse-drawn carts and people on motorbikes and the sounds of Arabic and the smell of dust. And you enter a street which has a dark, shaded roof, the last covered street of the old city of Cairo. This street is lined with 40 shops. Each of the shops faces the other, like a game of chess. And each shop is lined with the most extraordinarily colourful appliqués in white, in blue, in red, in pink, in yellow, in gold, in black. And each shop has a person, a man, sitting and sewing cross-legged, stitching one piece at a time, and they'll invite you in for a cup of tea or hibiscus kakadu and want to talk to you about the work they make. They're not in a hurry to sell things. They like a conversation. They rarely see tourists in this area because this is away from the busy knick-knack-lined streets of the Kano Kalili. This is a place where the tent makers have worked for more than 400 years, ever since this street was built by the Radwan Bey, who was the overseer of one of the most important ceremonies in Islamic Cairo, the pilgrimage of the curtains to Mecca, which became a very important event for the tent makers to build their craft and receive their first elite patronage.
How many of these tent makers are left compared to, like you say, some few hundred years ago?
A few hundred years ago, we believe there were hundreds of tent makers. We do not know how many because we look back at the records of the Ottoman guilds and we see the number of businesses, not necessarily the number of people. Then, as records become more recent, we have accounts from the 1970s, which put the estimate at maybe 300, 350 tent makers. Now, there are less than 80. And of these tent makers, maybe a dozen are regarded as masters or osta, the highest esteem of the tent makers of Cairo. This is a term that has come down through the generations from the Ottoman guilds, which used to formally govern the rules of Kaimir, the use of patronage, the quality of the art form. Now we're finding new ways of structuring this because the people involved are becoming so much rarer.
Dr. Sam Belker, guest curator of Kaimir, Medieval to Contemporary, the Tent Makers of Cairo, which is being held in the Islamic Arts Museum. This is an exhibition of artwork related to the creation of pieces for the tent, embroidered applique. Coming up, how to become a master at Kaimir. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng speaking with Dr. Sam Bowker, a lecturer in art history and visual culture at the Charles Sturt University in Australia. He is guest curating an exhibition on the tent makers of Cairo. You tell the story of how somebody, like a young person who would serve an apprenticeship and what this apprenticeship would entail before this person becomes skilled enough to earn his own pillow.
That's right. You earn your pillow, you earn your scissors. A young person or any person who wishes to join the tent makers as a serious professional tent maker may spend a decade learning the craft because it is surprisingly complicated. A young person who wants to join the tent makers begins with an apprenticeship and they come into the workshop and they are sewing a cushion. This little pillow will be sewn and re-sewn until the master of the workshop believes it is correct in every detail. Then that young person can use the pillow behind their back as they sew pieces for the rest of their life. It is their mark of privilege, their masterpiece. Eventually, once the young tent maker has learned and proven their skills over a longer period, the master of the workshop will give them a pair of scissors, the size of a ruler, massive shears. And this becomes the point at which the tent maker is an independent craftsman, because he is no longer borrowing the scissors of the man next to him.
This sounds rather medieval, in the time where there were guildsmen and people who were experts who were taking apprentices. Can this kind of practice continue into the 21st century?
Yes and no. The parts which they are keeping are things they are proud of because they know their work and they can relate to the modern era. But they are also looking increasingly at individual ownership of the businesses. The questions of loyalty between the master and the apprentice have been re-evaluated. And since the exposure of the tent makers to international exhibitions for quilters, for museums, for art galleries, they are now forming their own independent directions. They're now selling things online, for example. You can find them on Google. They are now selling things which are in collaboration with contemporary artists, not with guilds and workshops. So what you see is a proud echo of a heritage which is constantly looking for new opportunities and changing to suit them.
Now, this exhibition is being held within the Islamic Museum of Malaysia. What aspect of this tent making, the artwork there, reflects or reveals Islam?
That's a good question, because when you look at the contemporary pieces, we see contemporary art, which has an Islamic heritage. When you are looking at the Khedival pieces, you are seeing objects that fit comfortably within the broad church of Islamic art. Islamic art is an unwieldy term. It means what you want it to mean sometimes. But in the case of Khedival Kayamiya, the relationship between the faith, the makers, the use of calligraphy, especially from Quranic, Arabic, and popular sources, and the fact that these are made for contexts that can be called Islamic, like the Eid feast of Ramadan, these sit within Islamic art very well. But if we look at the newer pieces, the faith of the makers is not always obvious at looking at them. What makes it contemporary Islamic art is an open question. It is contemporary Egyptian art, first and foremost. And as long as it remains Egyptian, it will retain its authenticity.
This centerpiece at the exhibition is a huge tent. How long would something like this take to build?
The tent of the Islamic Arts Museum in Malaysia is an exceptional object. The stories we have of similar tents in the past have suggested they can take as many as 4 years to sew with a team of men working full-time. Whether that is the case for this tent, I think not quite so much. I think this tent is likely to have taken at least a year to have been sewn by a team of maybe 4 to 8 people. There is a story of a tent that was once in an American collection, which is now still visible in the Berry Museum in Arkansas, where the caption describes the tent as having been made by the 200 wives of an Arabian sheikh using gold thread over 5 years. I think that's a bit exaggerated.
In other words, it still takes a long time. It's not one of those machine-made things that you can just crank out in a day or so.
3D printing hasn't reached the stage yet.
What led you into looking at the tent makers?
There are two parts to this story. The main one is that my parents were living in Cairo and they formed a friendship with the tent makers of Cairo. But the second part happened in Wagga Wagga, Australia, a small town halfway between Sydney and Melbourne, where I was preparing a lecture for my students at Charles Sturt University about Henri Matisse and the Fauves. I was searching for an image by Matisse I had not seen before, just to make the lecture more interesting, when I came across Interior with the Egyptian Curtain from 1948, which is now in Washington, D.C. in the Phillips Collection. This struck me first of all because it had so much black in it, and black wasn't a colour I associate with Matisse. But then I realised this Egyptian curtain was Kayamiya, and had only previously seen contemporary Kayamiya. I'd never seen an old one before. So looking into this, I tried to find the original object. Where on earth had Matisse found one of these Kayamiya? Of course, he collected textiles, especially Islamic textiles. He was very well versed in this. But he had this one piece, which was photographed by Breton when he was in the space in the collection with him. He had this one piece, which he used in his studio in Vence, south of France, as literally a curtain. And since then, I found it appearing in about 4 of his artworks. He valued it quite highly. But the best thing about Matisse's relationship with the Kayamiya is he didn't know a great deal about tent makers, from what I can gather, but he liked the technique. The technique of Kayamiya involves cutting pieces of colourful fabric and arranging them on a flat surface, fixing them to space. He used the same technique in his paper cutouts, which he's so famous for, recently shown at the Tate Galleries and MoMA in New York. Now, these paper cutouts, I am sure that this was inspired by Kayamiya, because he acquired his Khedival Kayamiya in 1921 and he began making his paper cutouts after 1921.
The influence of the Oriental on the Occidental?
I'd like to think so. I think he saw a good idea and he used it and he made it his own. But I know this is an idea that the tent makers of Cairo have been using for hundreds of years before this.
Quilting has its way of bringing other people.
It does. It does. The men of the street are the tent makers. The tent makers of Cairo are the rock stars of the quilt world. They have been invited to perform with the American Quilt Society, the AQS, where they lead workshops and show their skills to people who have often never imagined there was such a thing as Islamic art or Egyptian art in the present day. So the appropriation of these works has become very important to see the relationship between art forms from Egypt and art forms from other parts of the world. They're cousins.
Any documentation still extant from any particular period about this tent making?
The tent makers themselves, historically, were urban artisans. They were not known for being literate. And we even find occasionally spelling mistakes in the Khayyamiya calligraphy, which is interesting. It tells us about their life stories. But the documentation on this form is sparse. When I began researching this, there were only two scholarly publications. One was by our own Dr. Hiba Barakat of this museum from her exhibition Beyond Boundaries in 2003. The other was by Blair Gagnon of the University of Rhode Island, who wrote about the souvenir forms of these appliques, also in 2003. But before them, there was only one person who made a dedicated and conspicuous effort to write about Khayyamiya, and this man was named Douglas Sladen, who was actually briefly an Australian politician. Now, Douglas Sladen wrote about how he admired the old Khedival forms. He didn't call them this. He called them the Grand Tapestries of Egypt. And how much he despised what the tent makers did to make things for tourists instead of things for mosques. He thought this was a degradation of the art form. But he was opinionated about this. I like his opinions because it gives us a point of how people were responding to the changing art form. But other than things like these comments in tourist guidebooks, there's very little written about Khayyamiya's history. So that is why I'm now writing the book to cover this and to write the new chapter of Islamic art.
From that perspective, then, research on this tent making, you'll have to go right to Cairo itself.
Yes, yes. The need to record the oral histories of the Egyptian tent makers is paramount. And luckily, my colleague, Professor James Piscatori of Durham University in the UK, received a grant to conduct extensive interviews with the living tent makers of Cairo, especially the older masters of the profession. These have now been recorded and are being translated, and I hope to feature some of them in the book as well in 2016.
How can their skills be kept into the future? If you say this is a shrinking population, they are the rock stars of the quilting world. I cannot imagine that there will be too many rock stars.
That is correct. It's an aging rock star workforce. To preserve the skills of the tent makers of Cairo, there are two options, and they're both being pursued now. The first is to teach these skills overseas to people who are already interested in the art form from what might be called an amateur perspective, at least enough to know how it's made and teach it again in the future. And the tent makers are teaching these classes too, so it's authentic. The second one is to encourage Egyptians to take it up as a serious profession. Now, that is trickier. To do this, you have to change two things. You have to give Egyptians a sense of economic security in this profession, which is a challenging ask given the changes of government recently in Egypt and the situation facing tourism there. The second issue with economic stability is prestige. You need to make a choice. Am I going to be someone who works in a menial profession that earns a guaranteed but small wage, or someone who works in a profession that is a small wage but has higher social esteem? And exhibitions like this internationally enable that prestige to grow for the art of Khayyamiya and encourage Egyptians to take up this art form as a profession.
Are the young tent makers, artists, are they more literate, are they more articulate about their craft as opposed to the aging artists?
Absolutely. The young tent makers are really their hope for the future. They are cultural ambassadors. The young tent makers find they have three things they need: the tent maker's sewing skills, a passport, and literacy and fluency in English. what the young tent makers are doing is changing the art form for new audiences, and they are the ones who are determining the future of the art. So it is the younger tent makers we are seeing degrees. Some of them are lawyers and engineers who go back to this art form because it gives them international opportunities. Some of them also have moved to the professional tent making from other professions that receive less respect, and they are now moving into middle class, upper class Egyptian society from this. There is a problem, though, that they may not reach these elite levels of Egyptian society, which still prefer to think of art as paintings and sculptures and maybe digital videos, not things sewn by hand. So this is still a frontier to be crossed.
What's the social status of a tent maker in Cairo?
The ones who own businesses may be more seen as middle class. My understanding of middle class in Egypt means you own a bank account and a credit card. And many of the business owners will do this. Many of the workers within this, however, not so much. They have job security for life, or they under the old systems they certainly do. But the entrepreneurial ones are certainly upward immobile.
Thank you. The exhibition Kemia, Cadival to Contemporary, The Tent Makers of Cairo is being held at the Islamic Arts Museum and will go on till January 31st, 2016, next year. I've seen the exhibition and do recommend a visit to the gallery. This is Front Runner Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.